Good evening. I hope everybody's been having a good week. Before we continue tonight, I would like to let you know where we're going to go for the next three weeks. So next week, we're going to finish the worksheet that has Genesis 36 through 50 at the top. So if you didn't get that, make sure to pick it up tonight. It's on the stool thing in the back. Pick it up and make sure you've got it, because it should be done by next week. We've already done the questions on Genesis 24 through 35, so we're going to finish that material tonight. If you have any questions about the questions, feel free to let me know. And keep in mind, they're not exact answer questions, so you know, just let me know. So that'll be tonight, and then next week we're going to do 36 through 50. Then before we get to Exodus, we're going to do a review. And that review is going to be like a timeline instead of an in-depth kind of review. I want us to have an overall picture of what we've looked at so far, because it, you know, plays into the rest of the Bible story. The worksheet for Exodus is already on the back. If you feel like you won't lose it, go ahead and pick it up. If you feel like you will lose it, you can leave it there, and I'll put it back out there a week before we get to it. So that's kind of where we're going in the next 3 weeks. We'll finish Genesis next week, have a review, and then begin Exodus, which I'm really excited about. I tend to get excited about lessons that are like two or three lessons ahead, because I study those ahead each Wednesday night, and then I have to come back and refocus on where we are. So tonight, we're going to pick back up with Jacob. Now, last week, we spent a good deal of time looking at Jacob and Esau's relationship, and I want to show you why before we move on to the final of these three love stories that I picked out. Look at Hosea chapter 12. I don't remember for sure if we went over this last week, so I wanted to open with it tonight. But Hosea was a particularly unfortunate prophet. Not all of them led glamorous lives. God used Hosea's bad marriages to show the relationship between him and Israel. And if I could get a volunteer to just read Hosea 12, verses 2 through 5. That's good. Thank you, Donnie.
As in the days of your appointed feast.
That's perfect. Thank you.
I thought you said 2 through 12.
Oh, I might have. But anyway, that's good. That's perfect. you know, Hosea, of course, came sometime after Jacob. And God, when Hosea came, used Jacob to make this point. And the point is what we looked at last week. If you could describe Jacob and Esau's relationship in one word, what would it be? I bet it'll be pretty close to the word I would use. Rocky? Yeah?
Unloving.
Deceptive?
Strained.
Strained. I like that. Yeah, I mean, there was so much conflict in their relationship. And when you look at Jacob's relationship with everyone, wasn't there conflict? I mean, he literally wrestled with God. Tonight we're going to look at more conflict between him and his wives, between his wives and each other, between him and his father-in-law. I mean, it's Jacob's fighting everybody. And this was God's general view of Israel. I mean, Israel constantly struggled with God. And what was their main struggle?
Unbelief.
And Jack idols, I'll take both of those. Those are both good answers. We hadn't gotten there yet, but I knew people knew it. You know, they constantly struggled with God. So let's go back to Genesis 28. When I was a kid, this was one of my favorite Bible stories. Jacob's ladder. And I'm going to do some summary, because ideally everyone has read this, and if you haven't, go home and read it tonight. But in Genesis 28, we're kind of going back to where we were last week. Remember, Jacob and Esau's conflict got so great that Esau said he was going to kill Jacob. And so Rebekah, Jacob's mother, said to her husband, get him out of here. Send him away so that he can marry a good woman, essentially, right? That was her cause. But really, she was trying to save his life from Esau. So Jacob, in verse 10, left Beersheba and went toward Haran. He came to a certain place, and he stayed that night, and he had this dream or vision. Now, one of our questions was to describe this dream, but let's look at it in brief. Look at verse 12. There was a ladder set up on the earth. Your translation may say something a little different. It might say a stairway or a path or a way, something like that. But it was set up on the earth. The top of it reached to heaven. The angels of God were ascending and descending. Verse 13 describes the Lord standing above the ladder. And then God gave Jacob this promise. What promise did God give Jacob? All nations would be blessed through him and his seed. Yep. Verse 15. Oh, that's true. Yeah, I forgot about that one. God would always be with him. Does that sound familiar? Yeah. That's essentially the promise to Abraham, right? So God gave him that same promise. Now, before we look in more detail, I put up a map, and I apologize for the quality of this map. Needless to say, it's a lot harder to color with crayons than I remember. Yeah. I wanted to get a map that wasn't as cluttered as other maps that I had, so I just tried to make my own with a blank map, and crayons are a little bit tougher than I remember. But at any rate, Jacob started, and last week we looked at this a little bit, but this area down here is where most of our continuing study will take place. Come back. Okay, yeah. This area down here is where most of our study will take place. Just so that you have an idea of where he was going, Beersheba was probably close down here. Haran, and these northern locations are a little bit more debated, but Haran was probably up here by the Tigris and Euphrates, and a little bit west was Padan Aram, where Jacob wound up with Laban. To zoom in a little bit so we might be able to recognize it better, this is kind of where we are tonight. You know, this, of course, is Egypt, and then you have the Gulf of Suez and the Gulf of Aqaba and the Dead Sea, and then the Red Sea, Jordan River, and the Sea of Galilee. And tonight is where Jacob started, right here in Beersheba. That's apparently where he set out from to go north to Haran, which you remember was up in the northeast. And he winds up here at Bethel, although it wasn't called Bethel yet. So at this location that he was going to call Bethel, he had this dream in which he saw the way or staircase or ladder to heaven. On it were angels ascending and descending, and God made this promise to him. And just the quote I chose to sum up that promise is, "I will not leave you until I've done what I promised you." Now look at verse 20, and let me get a volunteer to read verse 20.
Made a vow saying, "If God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I am taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God."
So what was Jacob's reaction here to this promise?
It sounds like he's trying to bargain.
It does, doesn't it?
Sounds... "If you do this for me, then I'll do this."
Yeah, I agree with that, Jack. It sounds a little bit like he's viewing it as conditional. I'd say it's characteristic of him. And I think we'll see that even more tonight. But he, you know, with that said, he does say, "God will be my God." You know, I mean, it's, which again, I think this helps, I think Jacob teaches us a great lesson about faith. It's not just that faith is a growth process like we've seen in Abraham. It's not just you don't have to be perfect in your faith. But God does allow some room for maybe our sometimes immature view of his promises.
A lot of times those people make those bargains with the Lord, they don't usually keep their... I used to work for a guy that was in the military. He was in a shipwreck. His ship was blown up. He was floating around on the trunk or something of it in the water. He made a deal with the Lord. If he could get him out, he would always live for him. But as soon as he hit the dry ground, he went and got a bottle of liquor and stayed on it.
Well, that is different from Jacob. We can at least say for the most part, Jacob kept his is the end of the deal.
That's what I say. Most times people don't keep their end of the deal.
Yep. I want to ask this question, maybe a thought question. It wasn't in the questions, so pardon me. But why a ladder or staircase? What do you guys think about this dream or vision? Anybody have any thoughts or ideas? I'll put a hint on the board. Remember, we're talking about God's relationship with Jacob as reflective of God's relationship with Israel. It's God's relationship with everyone. So what do you think about this vision or this dream?
Another quote that Jesus quotes in John 1:51, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." He's talking to Nathaniel there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Philip had met Jesus, gone back to Nathaniel, said, "You have to meet this guy." Nathaniel had criticized him. Jesus had proven to Nathaniel that he is who he says he is. Nathaniel had answered, "Truly, you are the Son of God." And Jesus' answer essentially to that statement was, "Why are you so impressed? You're going to see much greater things than this. You're going to see the heavens opened up and angels descending and ascending on the Son of Man." He used the language of this ladder or pathway that Jacob saw to describe himself. I mean, what do we know about Jesus? What's the way to heaven?
Through
Jesus. I am the way, the truth, and the life. And Jacob's conclusion when he saw this ladder in verse 17 of Genesis 28 was, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate to heaven." You know, it was right and it was wrong. Because I don't know that there was anything special about Bethel, if that's what he meant, that made that physical location geographically connected to heaven. However, Jacob was correct in seeing this vision and understanding that there is a way for God's people to get from earth to him. Right? I'm sorry? I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah, they were pretty close. I think Bethlehem was between there and Beersheba. But my map also might be a little bit funky because crayons. But anyway, he recognized that there's God and God's people, and there's a way for God's people to get from earth to him. Which, again, is the continuing relationship with God's people throughout history and even today. Jesus provides that way, truth, and life. Let's move into Rebecca. Rachel and Leah. I think I might have even said that this last love story was about Jacob and his wives, but it's really not. If I said that, I apologize. This last love story is about the love between God and his people. And we're, of course, at this point beginning to grow, but God and Jacob as they represent that. Now, Jacob left like his parents instructed him to in chapter 29, went on this journey north, and found a well. When he got to that well, there were people watering their sheep. The stone over the well's mouth was large, and they were all kind of waiting for it to be lifted. When Jacob saw Rachel coming in verse 6, he got up and he moved the... This is in verse 10 or 11. 10. He got up and he moved that incredibly large stone from the well's mouth and watered the flock of Laban, his mother's brother. What do you guys think of that? He's been sent north to go find a wife. He comes to a well. They tell him Rachel is coming and she's in, you know, in his family. And so he sees her coming and he jumps up and he rolls the stone away. And sounds like it. Sounds like he's showing off a little bit. I don't know if this is necessarily miraculous or not. It certainly appears like everyone was waiting for a little bit more manpower to do this, and he just did it himself. But at any rate, he certainly got her attention, because in verse 12, she ran and told her father, Laban. Now, this is where it really gets interesting. In verses 13 and 14, Jacob winds up staying with Laban for a month, and in verses 15 through 20, Laban comes to him essentially and says, "Why are you staying? You know, why are you here without pay? You're working for me. Let me pay you to work for me." So he says, "What can I offer to pay you?" Now look at verse 17. What was the noted difference between Laban's daughters?
Leah had weak eyes, and Rachel was lovely and born and beautiful.
Yep. We're not sure what weak eyes means. Yeah, but apparently, she wasn't as desirable as Rachel. So Jacob answered, "Let my pay for 7 years of labor be Rachel," which is a long time to work for a wife. Although, he probably lived longer, and he didn't see it as that long either.
Well, once you get married, you're working for me.
Well, that's true. Look at verse 21. In verse 21, Jacob had completed those 7 years, and he said, "Give me my wife that I may go into her, for my time is completed." And for anybody who did the reading, what did Laban do? A little bit of a bride swap, huh? Yep. He gave Jacob Leah. I think this is one of the first definite indications of Laban's character. And in a way, kind of serves Jacob right. I mean, essentially, he's gotten where he's gotten because of God's promises, but he's tricked a lot of people. He's hurt some people. He's lied to his own father, taken advantage of his own father's weakness. And then Laban enters the picture, and Laban starts doing the same thing to Jacob. I think there's probably a little bit of justice here. But at any rate, Laban gave Jacob Leah. What was his justification?
He said they had a custom of giving the younger before the older, and that's the only time I'd ever read that, because usually the older one went first.
Oh, I think he says, maybe I read it wrong.
Did I read it wrong?
The older one was supposed to go first.
Yeah, but he said that they have a custom of giving the younger first, is what I thought he said in verse 26.
It's not so done.
It's not our custom. Yeah. Maybe that's what it was. Okay.
Yeah, that was his justification.
That's what I was trying to figure.
Yep.
I thought that Rachel was the older.
Yep, your first instinct was right. Yeah.
No.
Rachel's younger, Leah's older, and he says, "I can't give you Rachel first because she's younger."
Gotcha.
Yeah. Which this shows sort of, I think, the. I mean, what we're about to read next, even into next week, shows a series of questionable decisions.
You know what makes you wonder, too? Why they wanted to go back to those same people, keep his wives, that's what Isaac got his wife.
Yeah.
From that same group.
Yep.
And rather than going and getting the people like Esau got, look what he's getting.
Yeah, that's true.
Kind of like going back to the same used car sales. Yeah.
Could you imagine being?
Keep going back.
Yeah. Could you imagine being Laban and like guys just keep showing up for wives? Yes, sir.
First of all, if Jacob worked for 7 years and didn't know about this custom, it obviously was either a custom that Laban invented on the spot, or he was so involved that he didn't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then God's hand is in this, because it's through Leah's offspring that the Messiah comes. Not through Rachel, through Leah. So God had a hand in that too.
But he had a hand in all of it.
Definitely. Yeah, which is, I mean, he's using this deceptive people to do his will. Yeah. You know, and there's justification for what Laban did. There's also much wrong with what Laban did, which we're going to see happen even more. So what did Jacob and Laban agree on after he was tricked into marrying Leah?
7 more years
for Rachel. So 14 total years for Rachel. Now look at this next part. I find this next part actually really funny. I call it the battle of babies. Because when you look at chapter 29, 31, and into chapter 30, look at chapter 30 and verse 1. When Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, what did Rachel do? She got envious or jealous. Look at verse 8. What did Rachel say she was doing? Yeah, struggling or wrestling with her sister. Do you guys see any irony there? What did Jacob's name to come? I guess he hadn't been named it yet, but what would his new name mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what the last week? Wrestled with God, yep. He's wrestling with everybody. I think my favorite part in verse 14, listen to this. In the days of wheat harvest, Reuben went out and found mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Then Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, "Is it a small matter that you've taken away my husband? Would you also take my son's mandrakes?" And Rachel said, "Then he may lie with you tonight in exchange for your son's mandrakes. They swapped mandrakes for, you know, rights to their husband. I mean, the moral of the story is probably don't marry sisters, but also, you've just got this enormous conflict in this family, don't you? I mean, it's like one has a child, so one has, you know, gives her concubine, you know, gives Jacob a concubine to have a child, and the other one responds by having a child, and the other one responds, and soon they're like literally just trading fruit for the right to be with their husband. And again, this was all part of God's plan. I mean, verse 32, God had a hand in the whole time. God remembered Rachel, and he opened her womb, and she had another child, and named him Joseph, which Joseph is going to be very important. But there's this struggle between Jacob's wives with these children. Does he have any questions or comments about this? Mm-hmm. Yep.
I wonder why he made such another deal with Laban and just being true.
I don't know either. I've kind of wondered that, or why 7 years? Probably has something to do with the numerology there, but you know.
Yeah, 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Must have been. Yeah.
You know, I just wonder, you know, I read the other day about David. It took a wife from a fellow that he had protected his shepherds, and he took that guy's wife after he died. He sent me out her and you get her the wife.
Abigail, yes, sir. He did.
Everything Laban had just about.
He did. Yep.
He does get Rachel after another week.
That's true.
But he still owes 7 years of work.
Yep. That's what it looks like in the text anyway. He agreed to it and then got Rachel and then worked 7 more years. Paid in advance.
You know, verse 21 of chapter 29, when he comes, he says, "Then Jacob said to Laban, give me my wife, my time is completed and I want to lie with her. If he had just said, give me Rachel, Laban wouldn't have had an opportunity to maybe try to deceive him.
That's true.
He kind of set himself up maybe there when he said, give me my wife.
Mm-hmm.
Just maybe looking at it from a different angle.
Yep. And all this, it's important to remember, God was keeping his promise. I mean, even in this wife battle, God was keeping his promise. You read there that he was remembering Rachel. So let's move on to Laban and Jacob. So Laban and Jacob had apparently a good relationship. I'm not positive how they could at this point, but apparently at this point it was still a fairly good relationship. In verse 25, as soon as Rachel had Joseph, Jacob sought to leave. But Laban answered, if you found favor, I know that God is blessing me because of you. Stay and work, and I'll give you whatever wages you want. So Jacob made a shrewd deal, which again, we see some of this shrewd intelligence on Jacob's part. But he made this deal with Laban where Jacob would take the livestock that was spotted or speckled or striped, and Laban would keep the whole white, yeah, which seems like a good deal. They even made sure to separate their livestock by about 3 miles. Wouldn't really be any chance of them interbreeding. And so Jacob and Laban went on this deal. And the other end of the deal was if Laban, at the time that Jacob did leave, found his livestock mixed in with Jacob's, he could rightfully take them. So Jacob, it appears, was still keeping both livestock. In verses 37 through 43, Jacob, I hesitate to call this deceit, because I just don't know. Well, anyway, I'll look at it. So Jacob took, in verse 38 and 39, sticks of poplar, I think some translations say, and he cut them so they were striped or spotted, and he would put them in front of the troughs when the sheep were in heat, and when they would mate, they would have spotted or striped or feeble livestock that he would then take. Now, one thing I find interesting about this occasion is that, as far as I know, at least, there's no real validity to having livestock look at any pattern while they breed. I mean, Mendelian genetics don't seem to show.
This is just another
God's intervention.
Mm-hmm.
Genetics is, that seems to be getting what he got in the animals, just the breed.
Yep.
I feel that would be. I think God had control over it. It's all matter.
That's what he answers in chapter 31. He talks when he's talking to his wives, and he's telling them, you know, about the different things. You know, if he wanted speckled, you know, he ended up with speckled. If he wanted straight, he ended up with those. And he says in verse 9, so God has taken away from your father's livestock and has given them to me. So he does give credit to God for doing that.
That's a good point, yeah.
In genetics, there's a dominant and recessive gene. Mm-hmm. And a lot of inbreeding will then produce a weaker type and more disease prone and all that sort of thing. So that's what happens, I know, with, you know, dogs and that kind of thing. When they interbreed, it creates weaker, more sickly, more prone to problems, health problems.
Mm-hmm.
So we did experiments in genetics with the fruit flies. And you would have to put them in an ice box and kind of slow them down and then count little characteristics, and before they woke up and flew away. So you have to work out that type of thing. It's been so many years since I've studied genetics, but that was part of one of the generals that worked for Hitler was Mendelian. He worked with twins and tried to figure out how to crossbreed and all that sort of thing to make a master race.
Huh. You know, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of those things where we find out in 10 years that staring at spotted wood does change, you know, some kind of physiological, I don't know, but... No, it sounds like they were just looking at it.
Yeah. It just sounds like Jacob was trying to have control of it himself.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think that's kind of what it sounds like. Yep. There's definitely trickery involved. Which, oh, go ahead, sorry. Oh, my bad. Okay, so at this point, their relationship goes sour. Jacob and Laban finally fall out. And it probably has something to do with Laban's sons in verse 31, in chapter 31 and verse 1, just reference, they went, you know, they said all that our father had, that Jacob has. So, in verse 31, or chapter 31 and verse 3, God told Jacob to go back to the land of his fathers. So Jacob departs to go back. In verse 7, he, talking to his wives, like Doug brought up, he brings up the fact that Laban cheated and changed his wages 10 times, but God did not permit him to harm him. If you look down in verse 12, God said, lift up your eyes and see, all goats that mate with the flock are striped, spotted, and mottled. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. So God was indeed there the whole time, even through this conflict. When you look in verse 19, Rachel stole some of Laban's idols. Now, when Jacob fled, God came to Laban and told him, don't have conflict with Jacob, let him go. So when Laban found out that Jacob was leaving, Laban pursued Jacob, but not in a manner to have conflict, until he discovered these missing idols. So he said to Jacob, let me have my idols back. Well, Rachel had stolen these idols, so she hid them underneath her clothing, and when they came in to check her tent, said she was on her period and couldn't get up for them to, you know, to look under her clothing for these idols. So the idols weren't found. Laban and Jacob made a covenant together not to cross a certain point and not to have conflict with each other. And and in that too, when they didn't find the idols, Jacob got angry with Laban and rebuked him, which again is just sort of, there's that back and forth between these two. Jacob was actually in the wrong, but here he is rebuking Laban as if Laban is in the wrong. But at any rate, they made that covenant together not to harass each other, attack each other, or get angry at each other. Which, to me, is interesting because apparently they were upset enough with each other that they would have attacked each other if God had not come to Laban and said, don't attack him. But they made this covenant, which brought Jacob back to where we studied last week when he was reunited with Esau across the Jabbok River, wrestled with God, and then reunited with Esau, whom he was also at conflict with, until these gifts and things like that softened Esau. So the point that I wanted to make tonight is that between God and Jacob, there was still this covenant love that didn't get broken, even though Jacob seemed to try pretty hard to take matters into his own hands. God still kept his end of the deal. So let's remember that as we continue next week into studying Joseph and then into Exodus. Are there any last quick comments or questions? All right. Make sure to have your worksheets for chapter 36 through 50 done for next week. And if you'd like to, go ahead and pick up the first worksheet for Exodus. And then, by way of the invitation, if you would open your Bibles to Matthew